Now, when you're trying to solve a mystery, a time machine could really come in handy. But we don't have time machines. Not yet, anyway. But for a biological mystery, Wisconsin has the next best thing. A researcher turned to the biological archives at the University of Wisconsin Zoological Museum to answer questions about a threat to an endangered snake species. Laura Monahan is a curator of collections at UW Zoological Museum. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
And Jeff Lorch is a microbiologist with the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center in Madison. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get to the snakes here, I want to check out the archive. Laura, I know I stole the time machine metaphor from you. I apologize. Tell us about this archive, in effect, of biology at your museum.
Well, we have about 750,000 specimens on the fourth floor in the basement of Nolan Hall. It's in a classroom building. And we collect birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, fishes, some aquatic invertebrates, and we prepare them to keep in the collection and make them available for researchers like Dr. Lorch.
And how far back does your collection go, time-wise?
The collection was started in the 1840s, and we have specimens that go back almost that far.
Okay, Jeff, so in your research, you had cause to go searching through the archives for some specimens. Can you tell us about the research and what you were after?
Yeah, so this disease, snake fungal disease, sort of first got noticed in 2008, and we were curious to know if the disease, the fungus that causes the disease, was introduced around that time, or if it had been present for a long time and we just sort of began to notice it around 2008.
And what did you find when you started digging through the archives, looking at these preserved snakes from decades ago?
Yeah, so we looked at over 500 specimens in museum collections, and what we found is that at least 10% of snakes that we examined had what superficially looked like this disease, and we're able to actually confirm it in specimens going back as early as 1945.
Laura, that makes me think about how you preserve a specimen like this. Not only a snake, you know, and keeping it intact so people can go and look at it later, but also keeping that fungus there, but also not letting that fungus keep growing and destroying the rest of the sample. How challenging is it to preserve things that accurately?
Well, different specimens are preserved in different ways. So the snakes that Dr. Lorch was looking at are preserved in ethanol, in jars. And then we have other specimens that are preserved as skins and then skeletons as well. So it depends on the type of animal that comes in and how it is eventually preserved.
And could you talk a little more, Laura, about the variety of kinds of research that people come and want to dig through your archives to find past examples of our animal life?
So we have some researchers who are just looking at morphology. They're just looking at some of the variation that we can see between specimens. Sometimes we send specimens to be analyzed for DNA. And we have a lot of students and faculty who use the specimens here for research projects that they're doing on campus related to their course studies or theses, dissertations.
Jeff, can you talk about the value of having that this older evidence of this fungus for this particular kind of snake and how it helps you understand the kind of threat that this fungus represents?
Yeah, so it's really hard when you try to do disease investigations and try to answer these questions because we often don't have a lot of historical samples saved. So we do turn to museum collections, and this has been done with actually quite a few other wildlife diseases as well. And the reason we care about when a disease is introduced is because it often affects both the impacts that the disease can have, but also how we would manage for the disease. So for example, if a pathogen is introduced, often in areas where it is introduced, the host species have never seen that pathogen before, so they're much more susceptible, and you can have pretty high mortality in a population that gets exposed. And then from a management perspective, something that's new or introduced, we might focus on trying to contain the disease so that it doesn't spread further, versus something that's been here much longer, we might be looking at how we can influence certain environmental factors, for example, that might sort of make the snakes be be more healthy and able to fend off the infection more effectively.
Now, Laura, when a researcher comes in looking for something like, say, snakes with fungus, I'm trying to get my head around how it actually works. Do they thumb through a card catalog, or how do they find, and how do you help them find what they're looking for?
Well, in this case, the fungus could be seen on the snake skin. And so Dr. Lorch could look through the collection and he could visually analyze the specimen. Some of them he had to pull out of the fluid to look at them and examine them. But we also, we have a card catalog that we still use today. We also have an electronic database that contains much of the information about the specimens, including some of those pathologies and other issues like the fungus that Dr. Lorch could see on the snakes.
And Jeff, can you just talk about the value of long-term research like this, not just for this particular snake fungus, but in general, in understanding the evolution, I guess, or development or spread of diseases on all kinds of animals?
Right, yeah. So, like I said, you know, we sort of lack the ability often when there's a new disease to know exactly what's happening and to do that relatively quickly. And museums are really beneficial in being able to examine a large number of specimens that are held in one location. So we can really go through those pretty quickly. And the way in which these specimens are preserved in many museums actually do allow us to get DNA from them, like the snakes that were in the UW Zoology Museum collection, so that you can actually get these detections from animals that are pretty old. So without museums, we really wouldn't have a place to turn in order to do that. And, you know, with museums that have large numbers of specimens, it's not just when you first detect it, but you can actually look at those specimens and look at how, for example, the disease has changed over time, when it may have first arrived, how prevalent it is at different time periods. So it's really something that's invaluable to do this type of research.
And Laura, I don't know if members of the public would be looking at these snake fungi in particular, but are there things that members of the public can check out at your collection? I'm not check out in terms of taking them away from you, but look at.
Yeah, so we are primarily a research collection, and we do support teaching here on campus. We try to participate in university-sponsored outreach activities and make specimens available for schools and nature centers. So we try reach out to the public as much as we can and make our specimens available to them.
Interesting. Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jeff, thanks for sharing your research with us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Laura Monahan, curator of collections at the University of Wisconsin Zoological Museum, and Jeff Lorch, microbiologist with the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center in Madison. We talked to them about what's in that museum and how Jeff was able to use some of the specimens to research a fungus that's affecting an endangered snake species.